listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
It's so good to be with you again. We have so much coming up, from talking about Planned Parenthood's new president, Dr. Leanna Wen. We're also going to be talking about how sex really matters to men and why is that, how it impacts them from an emotional perspective. That'll be at the end of the show. During the show, we'll be talking about how do you talk to your kids about the sex abuse scandal and so much more, getting you prepared now with those pro-abortion arguments that you're hearing with this new president for Planned Parenthood, Chris.
Well, Planned Parenthood is obviously decided that A, they're not going to mention that they do abortion ever, and that they are completely positioning themselves as a women's health care clinic. That's how they want the public to see them.
Well, it's interesting because Dr. Leanna Wen, in her introduction to Planned Parenthood, she ends up talking about how, well, she's helped a woman who has died from having had an abortion because she was too embarrassed or didn't have the resources she needed in order to obtain the abortion. But at the heart of this is they have been brilliant from a public relations perspective, implementing a doctor as their president, because they're saying Planned Parenthood is in the business of healthcare.
Which would be awesome if they were. I mean, if that's what they did, you know, great. You know, clinics for people who have no or low economic means to get health care, that'd be wonderful. However, that's not the bulk of what Planned Parenthood does. And it's just complete marketing at this point.
It's 100% marketing. Even the fact that they chose someone who was an immigrant to this country. So Dr. Leanna Wen is a Chinese immigrant. She came here with her family. And she talks about how her family received basic medical health care from Planned Parenthood. But I have a hard time understanding what that basic health care is, because they're not in the business of family health care.
That was very weird.
Yes. And I mean, even if you go to their website, it's all about sexual health care. Even the small amount of services they provide for men have to do with things like contraception and STD testing.
Right. And it's not like they were doing flu shots back when this doctor was a small child. You know what I mean? Like, this
exactly.
It's so much of what we're used to from Planned Parenthood. But they're like, look over here. Oh, no, don't pay attention to the fact that this is an abortion mill, that's right. What we do. You know, the majority of what we do is this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, well, if a car dealership hands out 1,000 pens and sells 100 cars, you're going to still call the car dealership a car dealership, right? And right. So the Planned Parenthood arguments, it's the same tired stuff, but it's packaged really well.
Very, very well. Kudos to them on their brilliance in marketing and PR, but that's why we have to be so wise. You know, we read in scripture, we have to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. And I think that really shows how we're meant to respond, because I know we have friends and family who think this way. And so arguments like, well, they're in the business of healthcare, basic medical healthcare for women.
Right.
Is this basic healthcare? Well, I would actually agree that some STD testing and things like that are basic healthcare today. We are skyrocketing with sexually transmitted diseases. Chris and I just talked about this a couple weeks ago.
Right. And here's the issue. Why are we the sexual revolution? Why are we? Because what Planned Parenthood is pushing, which is, you know, repercussion-free sex, that sex is whatever, it's not really integral to marriage or part of that. It just can happen. You're in control of your body in whatever context you want to be. That comes with repercussions. Those are STDs. Those are unplanned pregnancies. The healthcare they're providing is an ideology that's actually destroying or hurting more people than it's helping.
Right. And if they're there for you when you have your STD, they know you're going to be there for them when they need to get that abortion. And what's crazy, Chris, I have talked over and over again to Planned Parenthood employees. I remember just last summer I was at the mall and they were doing all this recruiting and scare tactic, trying to get people to fundraise. And the woman was high up in marketing and business development for Planned Parenthood. And I asked her, I said, well, if you are in the business of caring to reduce, you know, teen pregnancy, well, why are you encouraging contraception? They're like, well, this is helping to keep teens safe. I said, but that is also exposing them to sexually transmitted diseases.
Well, and statistically, the rise of contraception has not gotten rid of teen pregnancy. In fact, it's exploded. I mean, we talked about the statistic, you know, a couple weeks ago. It was like, what was 4% of births outside of marriage in 1960? Now it's 40% of kids are born outside of marriage now. Yeah. I mean, so the difference after the sexual revolution to before the sexual revolution wasn't that we suddenly got rid of unwanted pregnancies. Right. We exploded in unplanned pregnancies.
Right. And Dr. Leanna Wen emphasizes that she has been fighting back against the current administration,
right,
specifically on sex ed programs. Now, that has been one fantastic thing that we've seen changing is the amount of funding going into the programs. You guys, here's the bottom line. Studies have been coming out, one of which came out of Great Britain, which was out of the Journal of Health and Economics, and two researchers went in and looked at the fact that in Great Britain, they had a teen pregnancy rate 2 times higher than the rest of Europe.
Wow.
And so this was at the beginning of the 90s. They said, well, we've got to look at this. We have to decide what can we do about this. Well, they ended up implementing rigorous sex education with contraception type of education, very similar to what Planned Parenthood is doing. Guess
right.
what? They saw those numbers stay the same through all the way until 2008. And then in 2008, they changed their mind and said, this clearly isn't working. So they went to abstinence-only type of programs, getting rid of programs such as the rigorous pro-sex education. And
right.
guess what? They saw a 40% decrease in teen pregnancies and a 40% decrease in abortions.
It sort of makes sense that if people aren't having sex, they're not getting pregnant. I mean, that seems radical, but it's kind of a duh, right? and the reality is that traditional morality, you know,
right.
our Christian values, like when that's taught in the context of family or even with a peer pressure sort of mindset, it's effective,
right?
And we've moved away from that. And so, yeah, Planned Parenthood, well, we're here to provide necessary health care for young children to prevent pregnancies. That's not working. It hasn't been working. It's statistically proven to be not working. Yet they keep doubling down.
Yeah, I think that we have to be really wise. It is a marketing campaign. They're getting you in the door to trust them about your sexual crisis, which is your pregnancy that should be unwanted, and they're giving that message. And so even when they talk about the fact that, well, women will die without abortion and this is the greatest threat to Planned Parenthood today, well, the reality is that many women are being seriously impacted by abortion when they're taking the RU486 abortion pill. And in California, we just had the law passed. It's sitting at the governor's desk. I've put out some tweets asking you to contact the governor, asking him to veto it, but we're going to see the largest expansion of abortion in this country, basically since Roe versus Wade, because we're going to be making it free and available on public college campuses and university state schools for women to take this pill. And for those who don't know, gosh, Chris, you take this pill home. You don't even do it inside the abortion clinic.
Yeah.
And many women are actually taking this as late as 16 weeks when the cap is almost half of that
right.
as to when you should be. And yes, women are dying from improper abortions taking place, but they say it's hemorrhaging that's what caused them to die.
What caused the hemorrhaging? Interesting. It's a mystery. It's such a game of just shuffle where we just don't look over here. If you look at the statistics, they're wrong.
Right.
They've been wrong. They're proven wrong. Time and again, if you look at what the effects of, you know, the abortion pill, it hurts women. I mean, just think about what it is. It's like a shotgun blast of hormones, a completely unnatural. Where is this? Everybody has to have organic everything all the time, except for this. You know, then this, you just pump some of the artificial hormones and see what happens. Obviously, the body doesn't like it.
And you guys, I have to tell you firsthand, I have counseled and been with women as they have gone through RU486 abortions, the aftermath, when they've contacted me, they've changed their mind halfway through. I've had friends through blood clotting, blood clots the size of baseballs, sitting for days off of work in a tub of blood, and they are so mortified and embarrassed. They cannot even get themselves to take themselves to the hospital, call in friends and family for help, or even to call in an ambulance because they think, I deserve this. I inflicted this upon myself, because they know at the end of the day that there was an innocent human life there. And so how are women suffering? They are, because we've forced abortion as something that's legal and safe to them.
the spin is unbelievable with Planned Parenthood. And the hard thing is, I think we've moved into such a visual, like non-thinking time in our culture where everybody just, we just consume memes, right? We consume all of this kind of propaganda film stuff. People are going to watch this video with this Planned Parenthood president, and she's talking about she's a doctor and she cares about healthcare and the immigrant story and all of these things, and they're going to buy it. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, Planned Parenthood is so much good. Well, no, you have to kind of dig a little bit deeper and look at what they actually do. And again, I think we're just such a drive-by culture that people don't do that, right? So it's important that we as Catholics begin to speak up and to refute it, to begin to say things like, well, no, that's, what's the healthcare they're talking about? Right. Well, you know, breast exams. They don't actually do those.
Yeah, they do a very small number of them. There's only one clinic in the whole state of California, and they're open for a few hours once a week.
Right, so they refer out to.
Exactly.
You know, so does any other doctor, you know?
Exactly.
It's completely not necessary. So, it's unbelievable.
So, and one interesting part here, Chris, too, is that they talk about how harmful any administration, any state, how harmful it is when restrictions are placed on the abortion industry. And she tries to claim that, well, no other industry would you see this done. Actually, there are very high restrictions in the medical industry. It just happens to be that only in the case of abortion, because it has become so politicized, we don't have to enact restrictions. A perfect example was the 2016 Supreme Court case in Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt, where it basically said that Texas abortion clinics, they had many of them closing. I think they were going to be down to just one. And what happened is Supreme Court got in because Planned Parenthood said this is an undue burden to women. But at the end of the day, they only needed to meet basic ambulatory privileges so that you could get gurneys and things through the clinic and
right.
then have admitting privileges at a hospital if something goes wrong.
That's undue burden. Like, do they actually have like recourse if an emergency happens?
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So Chris and I were just talking about how Planned Parenthood has this new president. She is a medical doctor. And at one point in her introduction, Chris, and we're going to talk about the opioid crisis, but this is totally related. She talks about how she was not able to resuscitate a woman who was dying from a improperly done home abortion, essentially. They didn't say if it was RU-46 or what. But, you know, I've actually talked to a number of nurses who have said that they actually have a lot of women who come into the ER and urgent care after having an incomplete abortion, a botched abortion, where they've done it at home, and maybe through RU-486, and they maybe had some form of substance abuse. And then what happens is
right.
the abortion goes really wrong. And two things happen. One, it's detrimental to the woman because she's taking alcohol and or narcotics in addition to heavy levels of hormones. But then two, what happens is the abortion takes place improperly, and often the babies are born alive. Well, they can't resuscitate or do anything for the baby legally because the baby was unwanted. And so it's been heartbreaking for these nurses. And then on the other hand, you do have some women, because you're adding narcotics and the abuse of today's culture to these abortion circumstances, where it ends up being very harmful for these women. And Chris, I can't help but think, well, this is all related at the end of the day also to the opioid crisis.
Yeah, the opioid crisis is unbelievable in its scope. I've been very fortunate in where I live and in my family to not be super affected by it. But statistically speaking, it is unbelievable how large this has grown. And, you know, you drive throughout the country and there are areas of the country that are just overrun. Why is this? Well, I think it ties into hopelessness. Mm-hmm. And again, we've taken away from people hope. We've taken away from people, you know, faith in God. We've taken away from people opportunity, in a sense, because they look for someone else to come in and to take care of them, right? And then that doesn't happen, then this hopelessness comes in. Something like 33,000 deaths last year to gun violence, 40,000 deaths due to fentanyl, right? Which is a synthetic opioid, which is even worse than kind of your naturally occurring. So kind of giving you a sense like that, it's crushing communities. I think everybody, right. You hear it so much in the media, all this rage about gun violence. Well, okay, drugs are killing more people,
Well, that's what's crazy. And it, just to kind of clarify, there are 40,000 deaths in 2017, 30,000 of them were fentanyl. But the fact that one drug, a drug which is actually being prescribed specifically for pain medication, the fact that that is the main drug that people are truly dying from, it is just phenomenal to see that this ties back into a corrupt system in many ways as well, of how these drugs are so quickly being given out and they're not being properly structured and monitored.
Yeah, actually, it's 72,000 drug overdoses last year.
I'm talking about 2017.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at 2017.
72,000 drug overdose deaths estimated in 2017, according to drugabuse.gov. So
big gap in numbers. Interesting.
It's unbelievable. And this is a public health crisis.
Right.
And it's about time that I think the government's catching up and saying that. I think the hard thing is, what can the government really do? You know, there's some interesting things that are being proposed, but it looks like we're getting some bipartisan cooperation here to say, okay, we really need to step in. We really need to do something at this point. Something has got to change because we're losing populations.
Yeah. You know? And I think that this is a testament, because right now things, you guys, are so polarized between Democrat, Republican, right, left, you know, conservative versus liberal, you name it. We could go on and on. And they're having a hard time agreeing on anything because it is so polarized, and they're trying to hold each other up against a wall of, well, I'm not going to agree to this unless you concede on that. Well, the one thing that we are seeing truly people coming together on right now has to do with the opioid crisis. And it just is a testament to the fact that no matter what's going on in the culture, we have common human experiences. And I think a lot of people have been deeply impacted by those who have taken their lives through suicide, those who have taken their lives through the opioid crisis, that it provides an opportunity for compassion and communication.
Yeah, and just to kind of put numbers in perspective, at 70,000 deaths a year due to overdose, that would kill the entire state of Wyoming in 8 years.
Mm.
Just to kind of give you a sense. And that, Wyoming's partially populated, it's 579,000 people, but that's pretty crazy. You know, I've not funny, but I, you know, there are nurses in our life, and I've talked to them about this. And so, you know, we know a nurse who works in Newport Beach, right? One of the most affluent communities in the country. We know nurses who work more around us, more middle class. They will tell you that every weekend, every shift they're on, people come in drug overdose, and there's no rule. It's not, oh, it's women. Oh, it's men. Oh, it's teenagers. Oh, it's middle-aged guys. It's hitting at every point. Because I think, you know, people are diving into this. They don't understand it. It's not a regulated substance. So you may be getting something good. You may be getting something bad. There's really no way to know. And you don't, it's hitting everyone. And again, I think it is. It's very encouraging for the government, for senators on both sides of the aisle to say, no, we need, it's time. It's time for us to step in. And some of the regulations that they're talking about actually make sense, like greater screening in the mail. Right?
Yes.
That seemed like a great choice to me. Is like, well, let's just make sure they can't mail it around freely.
Yeah,
right. That, let's take away ease of transportation.
Or if something's suspicious, allowing the postal workers to report that. I think that that's huge. Another interesting thing is they're actually putting a lot of funding into research. They're putting it into the National Institute of Health for research on pain addiction.
Right.
And how is this pain addiction converting into substance abuse? And I can tell you, I know many people who it's gone from, I had a severe back injury, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, they are incredibly hooked, and it's destroying their lives. Their children have been taken away. They've gone through divorces. You know, I see this, and it all started with a simple bit of pain. And I mean, we could say many things, from what does that say about an addictive personality? What does that say about, you know, maybe seeking an escape from the pains of the world in general, right? But the fact that they're putting research into this and recognizing that the pain is just a cover-up maybe for something deeper that's going on, that's opening people's lives up to drug addiction.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was talking to a healthcare professional a couple weekends ago, and they were telling me that if you take Tylenol in combination with like ibuprofen, so acetaminophen and ibuprofen, it's actually better at pain than some opioids, right? But we just, and you know, you gotta be careful with both those substances. I'm not a doctor, you know, talk to your doctor. But you know, how do we look at these, you know, how are we treating pain? You know, how are we shutting off the different pathways, the pain sensors? How can we do that without affecting the sort of, the pleasure response system, right? That euphoric kind of state that opioids give. The reality is, as a painkiller, opioids have a whole bucket load of other things that they do. And so, yeah, research going into how can we make a better painkiller? How can we turn off the pathways that we want to turn off and not set off the ones that we don't want to set off to create that euphoria? Because, yeah, I, again, most addicts never intended to be addicts. Mm-hmm. And again, with opioids, it is people who had real pain. They had back issues. They had injuries. And it just, they kind of got hooked on an accident. Right.
And on an existential level, people are turning not just to these opioids, but even to marijuana. And this is what the big argument against marijuana is. I know so many people who have said that marijuana leads to atheism because you take yourself into a different state, a different place. And God is not necessary. You are your God, you know, this distance from everything in the world. And I think that when you talked about how it's hopelessness in the culture, yeah, all of a sudden people just want to feel something.
Well, and if you look at the communities that are hardest hit by the opioid crisis, and again, it's in every community, but the ones that are really devastated, they're also communities that are really suffering from economic devastation. Mm. You know, I hate to go back, it's the economy, but it kind of is.
Economy matters
because, you know, we talked about this on the last episode, like the value of work, like work creates a sense of dignity in a person, right? And so when you have a sense that I have some control over my life to go out, I can do a good day's work, I can feed my family, I can move forward in the world, that helps you tap into hope. When you feel like there's nothing I can do, I'm going to live in this hopeless situation in this destitute town with all these other people, yeah, it you just look for escape. And we see that. And again, I'm not excusing anything, but I'm saying, you know, as we look at our country and economic policies, are we giving people the opportunity for the hope in those situations?
Yeah.
You know, and that's an economic opportunity.
Yeah. Another perspective on this too, because there's so many caveats to the whole opioid crisis, is pain and what is our pain tolerance. And, you know, working in Pilates, I work a lot one-on-one with people who have severe herniations and back pain, who have had hip replacements, all these different injuries with their spine and body. And I know firsthand in looking also at the studies that when you exercise increases your pain tolerance. It also increases your state of well-being, how your mind perceives and looks at things, being positive. And so what happens, though, is sometimes people are injured. They don't end up doing their physical therapy. They use it as an excuse not to exercise. And what happens is those people cannot get back up. And it just reemphasizes the importance of good habits and the importance of exercise in our lives, because this could be a huge game changer for disciplining yourself, denying yourself, pushing through. Even if you have, you know, I have a client who's getting ready to have a surgery, and she came to me saying, okay, let's do a private so that I know what I can do at home moving the other half of my body, because I know how important this is for my mind and my body, my soul ultimately.
Yeah, pain is part of the human experience. And again, it's nothing to, we don't seek out pain, but it's just part of the human experience. Like, we have pain. My wife was talking to an older person at the gym the other day. I think he was in his 80s. And he said, yeah, you know, the reality is, you know, you run into a senior citizen like me and we're smiling and we've got a good attitude, but the reality is we're probably hurting someplace. Mm. And of course we want to avoid that. We want to stay healthy. We want to do everything we can to avoid pain. But at some point, on some level, you kind of have to accept, like, it's okay if I ache a little bit. It's okay if I hurt today. It's okay if I wake up and I don't feel the best I have ever felt, but I can work through it. I can do things to make it better. What can I do?
Yeah, working past your physical pain. And isn't that the story of the Christian walk to begin with, is that overcoming whatever burdens or trials? And sometimes that might be a physical burden of how we are feeling and offering it up for a specific intention. Maybe you have that pain as an opportunity to make reparation for some sins of yourself. Or I'm sure, I know there are a lot of people suffering out there from the crisis within our church who you can offer your pain up for others. And it makes that pain redemptive. It gives meaning to your pain and suffering.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
I was just talking to those who are with us on YouTube, Facebook Live, and Instagram. For those who don't join us live during the week, you can always go and see what these crazy hosts look like and get the behind-the-scenes conversations while we are in studio. But what we're talking about now is, you guys, so much has been ongoing with the sex abuse scandal. And I know for some people, it's maybe really exciting. It's an adrenaline rush. For others, they think they really just have to know every single piece of information. Other people are maybe in the depths of despair over this. But I want to challenge you guys. We have to be strong. We have to be strong in our faith, and we need to be strong for others, because there are a lot of people who need to talk to their young children, their teenagers, or maybe their children who have fallen away from the church, or maybe who are going through the motions of the faith, but this hits and maybe they're not going to stay.
Yeah, you know, I the sex abuse scandal, you know, the first round, and I hate that, was 2002. And it's interesting because 9/11 happened 2001. Mm-hmm. And I got caught in this loop where I would just check the news every morning. Like, I got to be like, because after 9/11, I was just checking the news. And then the priest abuse scandal happened, and I had a pastor I was working for at the time who was removed in 2002. And, you know, I'd hear my parish being talked about on the radio as I was driving into work or driving home from work. And so again, you continue that loop, and it's so easy, you know, and again, I don't know if it's a rush, I don't know what it is, but it's almost like, I just want to know. And I think thankfully, we're looking at this particular scandal, and there isn't a wave after wave yet coming. We haven't had, you know, more and more things been released. Now we look at, there are some grand jury investigations happening throughout the country, and God forbid, Lord, we pray that there isn't, you know, more Pennsylvania coming.
Well, Germany just came out the end of last week. They had another 3,600 children who were abused under the age of 13, and over 1,600 abusers. So there are more pieces coming out.
Were those current or were those past?
It was another 70-year study going all the way up to 2014, though.
Yeah,
and so while it is a massive study, these are waves that are continuing to come up out, and we're hearing even personal stories. And I think even the personal story, one after another, is enough of a wave to impact our emotions and our sorrow and our anger. And so we have to be ready, because more of this is continuing to come out.
Yeah, but having, you know, I do think the one glimmer of hope, if there's any glimmer of hope at all, that is, you look at cases after 2002, and there's a dramatic, steep drop off. Yeah. I mean, I'm not an apologist at this point, but the church did change, you know, at that point. I think there's some major, major failings in dealing with people at the level of episcopate. I think we have to go back and look and say, who enabled? Are they still in active ministry? And we have to deal with that. But since 2002, we have seen that all of the, and let me tell you, as a person working in the church for the last 18 years, the level of training that you have to go through, the awareness that you have of possible abuse situations to be on the lookout for, or mandated reporting, all of that is kicked up so much that it has had an effect.
Absolutely. So I think it's important, we have to kind of, and we're going off focus just a little bit because we want to talk about you and talking to your children, but it's important to emphasize that the decrease in sex abuse toward adolescent and minors has significantly decreased, and there are many processes being put in place. A lot of the scandal that's happening right now has to do with post-puberty or young adults even, and it's homosexual activity. And I have to say, more of this is continuing to come, especially, you know, I was just talking to a friend who worked in Brazil for a long time in the church, and he said every seminarian that he interacted with, it was just assumed that they were gay and that they were interacting either with one another or people outside. And so that perversion of a sexual interaction that is not the way God physically made our bodies to interact is part of why we have seen this justification of sexual abuse in other ways as well. But what we need to talk about is, how are you guys doing and how are you reaching out to others? Maybe that's your children to start with.
Yeah, I think there's absolutely an undeniable statistical thing that we are seeing, that the majority of these cases were same sex. Right. So you're dealing with same sex, but for the most part, they were adolescents. It was young men, as we would say, not children. Right. And so that does kind of change the way it's in, because the church, when it, after, it, you know, in 2002, it all became about child abuse. Well, let's call a spade. Let's talk about really what was happening. And we didn't do that. You know, it's interesting, but again, I think talking to your kids, it absolutely needs to be said, you know, that this was something that was happening, that most of these cases are in the past. You don't need to be afraid. We're never going to put you in a situation where you would be afraid like that. And the church is different than it was during those times. And I think that's where you start.
Yeah,
you
know? I'm going to post out a great article that came out too, where psychologists are helping, you know, how do we look at this from the kids? First, you know, you really need to look at, well, how old are they? You know, making sure it's age appropriate, but figuring out what do they know first? Because I know I even have a sibling and had no idea what was going on and overheard a little bit of a hushed conversation that I was trying to have with my mom. And, you know, kind of saw this face like, what's going on? And so we vaguely gave information, but not going deeply into it and just kind of, I'm so sorry. And,
yeah.
You know, I think that there's a time and a place. The reality is that most teenagers and young children do not need to know. And so if they do know something, asking, well, what do you think about that? How does that affect you? And then letting them know that, yes, you are angry, not by yelling, but saying, I am angry, but emphasizing the importance of faith.
I think there's absolutely something
of the church
to be said too, that as Catholics who are involved in the life of the church, like you and me, you know, we tend to forget that the rest of the world moves on very quickly in this 24-hour news cycle, in that the reality is if you're watching network television, you're probably hearing more about, you know, the Supreme Court case, Supreme Court confirmation hearings than you are hearing about this. And so, yeah, again, I think 2002 versus 2018, 2002, this was a much bigger deal in the news than it is in 2018. I think personally that's horrifying. I think it's horrifying that that scandal in the Catholic Church isn't a giant deal, but we already went through 2002. So yeah, your young children may not have even heard about this, except they probably heard about it on Sunday in a homily, because that's what it's been at least in our parish for the last 4 weeks,
right?
Which, quite frankly, I'm ready to move on, at least from the pulpit.
Well, and in front of your children as well. Does this need to be talked about in front of young children?
I think it needed to be addressed. I still think the church needs to address it every week. Maybe not, you know, and so that's, but again, I'm thankfully not, I'm personally not dealing or was not personally affected by this, apart from my pastor being removed. Maybe if I'm the family of a victim, I do need to hear it every Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, I do need to hear the church is sorry. The church has changed. The church will do better. You know, that's a different situation. I can't speak to it.
And that we also haven't done enough in the area of sexual morality, and that people are really hurting. And I think that's something people really deeply do need to hear. And you know, maybe you have an adult child who's fallen away from the church, or maybe they're going through the motions, you know, just reaching out to them and saying, hey, not you venting to them, but how are you doing? I know you've probably heard what's going on, because they need to talk this out. I've found that a lot of people need to talk out, man, like, because it's so graphic and so horrible. Sometimes they need to talk out what they've heard and be validated in their anger and their frustration to know, yeah, you're right in being angry.
Oh yeah, I was with a group of men in the mountains, and we sat around a campfire and we just talked it out. And it was, you know, myself, my brother, some friends from church. We had a priest up there with us so we could have mass on this weekend trip. And it was great because it was an open conversation. You could say whatever you want. It was helping to understand, not to understand it, but to come to grips with, to get your head around. Because some of this stuff is hard. How can this be the church and this happen? Mm-hmm. You know, and then you get to that point. Well, can the failings of man invalidate the truth of Christ? Right? And no, it can't, but you got to get there. You know, right. So yeah, absolutely. Those conversations with your adult children, very important.
Yeah. And you know, I know I was talking to someone the other day, and I had heard that their child came up and said, I don't know how you can consider yourself a Catholic with what's going on. Yet he wasn't willing to say that to a dear friend who was a priest. And so this information came back to the priest, and man, it just like struck the priest. Like, I tried to bring it up, and Grant, he kind of tried like to bring it up in a way without going like, if you want to talk about this, you know, what happened in the church this week? And you know, I hear stories of this, and we just have to be blunt. How are you doing? You know what's going on, or have you heard what's going on in the church? And maybe you have the opportunity before they've heard about it to say, yeah, there are horrible, sinful people in the church. You know, one priest, I was with a priest this weekend, and he was referring to this, I think so graphically, morbid in some ways, but as the pus within the church, and that the pus has to come out because it is killing members of the body, and it's going to ooze out. It's going to ooze out slowly for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's going to be disgusting, but part of the church will die through this, but it will rise back up because the church is God's and the church itself is perfect. It's human beings that are faulted. And so helping people to talk to them and listen to them through this is so important today.
I think it's very important to not be condemning, right? I've heard this from people on, you know, the trolls on the internet, like, well, the people of weak faith are going to leave anyway. We're not supposed to be chasing them out. Does that make sense? People of weak faith, we're supposed to be reaching out to help strengthen their faith.
Right.
We're not let the door hit you on the way out kind of people here. And particularly in an issue of scandal like this, if people who are struggling with their faith are struggling more because of this, then what's the role of the layperson? Well, for me, it's to hear them. It's to hear them. It's to walk with them. It's to reach out to them. It's to say, I know you're hurting because of this. I know you're confused. How, you know, I'd love to sit down and have coffee, you know, when I'm wearing my everyday Catholic t-shirt, right? Like it's, I'm kind of a billboard, right? So come up and talk to me about the Catholic faith. And if a layperson, I care about Christ and his church, then that's my role. Mm-hmm. That's my role to just walk with, to accompany people. You know, and that, and again, we have to take that seriously. We can't be people in our cell phones all the time. We have to be people outward looking.
Mm-hmm. There was an image that I thought really spoke to me this weekend. Father Francesco of the Child Jesus was talking when I was up on a retreat in Denver, and he was talking about how St. Peter had the ability for God to speak through him and also for the devil to speak through him. And he talked about the moment
in like a couple verses.
Within a couple
amazing.
Verses.
Yeah,
exactly.
Great.
You know, where, you know, St. Peter first makes this great proclamation that, you know, Christ, you are the Son of the living God. And then in the next moment, Peter's pulling Jesus aside to tell him, you know, you're not going to suffer. You're not going to go through that. And Jesus looks at him and says, get behind me, Satan. And if the first pope had the ability for God the Father to speak through him in one moment and the devil to speak through him in another, so can our Pope today, and so can each of us in what we do. And this is why it's so important that we're grounded and rich in deep prayer, so that God the Father is speaking through us and not the evil one.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So hang with us here. I'm going to throw this claim out here. We're going to chew on it through the rest of the show today. And that is that for a man, sex is primarily emotional and not physical.
Oh, yeah. I would absolutely. Solid statement there. So we're getting back into the book we've been kind of talking about, For Women Only. Worst title ever. But I do like the subtitle, What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men. And like I said, last episode, I recommended this book to people. I think the author does a great job of giving us some insight into the male mind. I don't agree with everything 100%, but I think it is very insightful. And I do anticipate that this is going to be a very uncomfortable segment of the show for me personally.
Just for you, for me as well.
I think for both of us, but hey, let's jump into it and make the listener uncomfortable as well.
And we didn't talk about it ahead of time. I'm like, oh, we could talk about how we approach this, or we could just go for it.
Well, it is what it is. It'll be more spontaneous.
Okay, so here's the deal. This is why I'm just going to throw out here. I love Shanti Feldhahn's book because she's a researcher. She really does a lot of research behind relationships in particular. And so chewing on the research, I think, helps us to dive into the issue. Again, whether or not we agree with where she goes from there on all the issues, the information is incredibly insightful.
Absolutely.
And so here's the bottom line. You know, we all know that, and we're going to talk about this on the next episode, that men are more visually oriented with how they look at relationships, the physical body, and so forth.
I would say the world.
But the world, yeah. Yes. And yeah. I'm actually, it'll be some fun stories on the next episode that we're doing. But here, recognizing that we know that men are very sex-oriented. You know, you hear, oh, guys think about sex all the time. Yes, adolescent boys absolutely do. You get to a certain point where you've got to start to work on that, right?
Testosterone.
Testosterone.
It's a thing.
It depletes with age.
Yeah, I'm crossing into the middle age now, so it's now it's a fight to keep it up. Maybe, yes, you know, the testosterone. Yeah, but it is interesting. You know, I think the author, you know, we say that men think about sex all the time, and it has such a negative connotation, and that's not at all what's going on the majority of the time with men. It's that desire to know that your wife finds you attractive, right? Like that she's still, like that you still have that. And that's where I think that women in a married relationship sometimes can misunderstand. They can think it's just about that physical thing. And it really isn't just about the physical thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, I think that it was really, I think, you know, a very insightful chapter.
I think insightful because, you know, the fact that the man is attractive, the fact that as a man you feel needed, that also, you know, on an existential level, that there's this a deep-seated feeling sometimes of loneliness within our heart, and not that sex should answer that. But what is so phenomenal about the sexual act, and this is why the church has such a high view in respect of the sexual act, is it is the only way that two people can become one in a way. And remember, God is asexual, that God himself is one. And it is a union of persons where, you know, someone else in the world does also exist. And so it's a mutual affirmation of one before the other. And so when sex is denied, or say when the wife is placating her husband, what happens is the husband often knows that in most cases, that's a lie. That, you know, while she's placating him, 97% of men actually said they wanted to feel wanted, basically, and not just placated.
Yeah, and so I would argue maybe with Shanti that it's not sex as important as it is just flirting. I think more important in a relationship than the actual consummation would be the feeling of desire, right? And so, you know, so for instance, if you're a couple and you're doing NFP, NFP can be really rejecting at times because your bodies want to do what they're made to do, right? And you're releasing all these pheromones and all those things. And so if you're not flirting with each other, it can feel like, again, a subconscious, but like a rejection, right? And that's what men get. And again, our lives are so super, super busy, right? And so, and you know, for us, we've got 6 kids, and a lot of people have, you know, maybe 2-3 kids, and they're going to all the activities the kids do and driving people around, and mom's working full time and dad's working full time. You get to the end of the day and everybody's just tired, right? But if you're not flirting with each other, if there aren't little affectionate touches or glances, then yeah, as a man, you absolutely feel like, what am I? Ugh, it doesn't even matter that I'm here.
Yeah.
Right. And it's way more than just the physical act.
And I think at the end of the day, we're living in a culture where marriage is struggling, relationships are struggling, cohabitation is a norm. And what I think really stood out is in the fact that, really, again, emphasizing that sex is emotional, not just physical to men, that what we see is NFP, I think, is such an answer to this because it opens the door of communication, that if it's a no, there's still the importance of understanding, well, I am learning through the sexual act, sacrificial love. I'm supposed to be learning life-giving, physically self-giving love. It becomes a third. But that also means that my actions toward you, even when I'm tired at the end of the day, and how I communicate, how I show you are appreciated,
right,
really does matter.
Absolutely. And that's where I think a lot of couples struggle with the NFP is you feel like it's just, okay, the door's red light, right? And so the flirting doesn't happen. The emotional, the physical contact, because you're worried, you know, we don't want to get in a situation where we're going to be in sin. We don't want to get in a situation where we're going to have to, like, you know, we're going to go where we want to do, weren't ready for.
Where you go too far and you have to stop, and
right,
then that's not what God's
right
calling you to do.
But I think in most cases, it would be way healthier to be frustrated for a man, at least for a man, to be frustrated because you wanted to, than to feel like you weren't wanted. Does that make sense? And so that's kind of the NFP answer. But, you know, I thought she said a great point. She said, for her husband, sex is more than just physical need. It's as serious to him, say, as a sudden silence would be to you, right? So if like your husband came home and just started giving you the silent treatment, that's what it would feel like to a man if his wife just doesn't engage physically with him. And that for most women, that would not be okay. But there's a disconnect. We don't think about it that way.
Yeah.
You know, and so I thought that was a great insight.
And I think that that's a tough comparison for women to chew on. You know, they're like, well, you're talking about basic talking and then you're talking about sex. And it seems like a big
But in both
change.
Ways, you're talking about communication.
You're talking about a love language at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
And our sexuality is a love language of a couple. And so I think that it's so important, you know, especially looking into the church's teaching on Humana Vitae and how the church teaches, you know, one thing, it's been fun going back and reading a book that was published 25 years ago on the 25th anniversary of Humana Vitae. And it takes a philosophical approach to sexuality. And it talks about how, you know, the church's teaching is that, you know, you belong to your spouse and your spouse belongs to you, which is why when one spouse desires to have sexual intimacy, the other is called to cooperate, participate, and lovingly so. And if they don't, it's a mutual agreement that you can't deny your spouse the rights to the sexual act. And what was being talked about, and you know, it's nice reading like 30 years ago, 40 years ago, something that was read about sex, you know, pulled back away from the current mindset, talked about, Chris, how important it is that when a woman does willingly, or the man, but more so usually commonly the woman who's not as willing, willingly does participate, although it wasn't initiated or initially desired on her part, that in the end, the both turn out the better for having engaged in the sexual act. From the importance of the physical bodily union, to the importance of the hormones and chemicals that are being released, to the sacrifice that they both made in participating, that in the end, sexual intimacy was a gift given by God for the good of the spouses.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Now, I want a caveat, though, and this is something the author points out. 3 out of 4 men would still feel empty if their wives weren't engaged. Yep. Does that make sense? So if you're just phoning it in, that's actually more hurtful, right? So if you're just like, well, I don't want to reject you and I have to do this because blah, 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 that's actually more hurtful to a man than right. to just say, you know, it's not a good time, you know what I mean, or whatever. You know, it's interesting. I have a priest friend who in our parish, it seemed like there were just divorce after divorce after divorce of couples, and they right around the 15 to 20 year mark. And I, you know, I'm seeing this in my youth group. I'm seeing families that I thought were so solid all of a sudden just falling apart. And I was talking to this priest friend of mine. I said, it terrifies me. What is that? And, you know, is it because the hormones change? Is it because of what's going on? He goes, well, I'll tell you what, in 90% of the cases I hear, they, by the time they get in my office for marriage counseling, they'd stopped having sex like 3 years ago, right? And then everything happened and just kind of spread. But that was a huge kind of, you know, fork in the road, as it were. Like when that ended, the marriage began to just fall apart. And what got him to that point, there's a lot of reasons. Most of what I think happens in marriages, we're so busy. It's the devil's tool. I mean, like we're so busy that we forget to look at the other person. And I know for women, it's very easy to get caught up in, I'm just so busy taking care of the kids and taking care of the house. And that was one of the comments in the article I loved. This woman realized, she goes, my husband never says to me, "Why the floors aren't clean." He never says, "Would you clean up the kitchen?" He never says, "Dinner wasn't good enough." He never says, "You didn't dress the kids nice enough." The one thing he asks me for is the one thing I refuse him. And I was like, whoa, that was pretty rad out there, man. That's something to think about.
It's amazing just chewing on this because it's such a sensitive topic for a lot of people. And I know people are going to be listening to us and they're not going to like hearing this, especially maybe if your marriage is struggling. And, you know, at the beginning of Shanti's book, she really emphasizes, you know, don't knock what's being said here. Listen, this is just part of the way men think. And we have to remember, and especially in the next episode, we're going to be talking about how radically different the wiring of our brains are in certain areas. But I think coming back to this, there are lots of things impacting. Well, maybe emotionally I don't feel as supported, so then I'm withholding sexuality, right? And then it turns into this cycle. The only thing that can stop the difficult cycle that you are in is you and your actions and your attitudes. And she even talks, you know, maybe you actually are struggling with physical intimacy. Maybe you need to go talk to a psychologist to work through a very difficult thing in your marriage, in your own emotions, in your own life, maybe a past of sexual abuse, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I would even say it's not about the sex. It's about, like, so if you're at a point where you're like, well, we can't because of whatever reason, be playful with each other. Flirt with each other. You know what I mean? Go out of your way to help your husband. Know that he's desired, that he's, you know, and it'll go a long way. If your marriage is struggling, it'll go a long way to helping that marriage out for sure.
And knowing just very briefly that two different forms of antidepressants, anxiety medication, and hormonal contraception really have led to a decrease in libido. And so for many marriage and family therapists and psychologists, they've said that this has played a significant role. And so this is for your marriage. It's something to think about, something to discuss. We hope it's something that you can really think on and just be open to as well. So check out the book For Women Only by Shanti Feldhahn.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.